And we're chatting to Randy Torriborelli. Good afternoon. How are you, Randy?
Good afternoon. How are you doing? I'm fine.
Delighted to have you on, of course. And, I mean, Frank Sinatra's life, many people would know a little bit about it and would know that he had kind of mafia connections and blah, blah, blah. But actually, some of the stuff which you've been finding out here is absolutely quite explosive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm a big fan of Frank Sinatra's, and he's a subject that I've spent a lot of time on. Basically 20 years of my life researching Frank and really trying to understand the man behind the legend, which is, you know, what the book is called. And I think that my readers would be really satisfied with this book because it's all of Frank. It's pretty much everything you could ever want to know about Frank Sinatra, that's for sure.
And let's start really earlier on. You know, he's from New Jersey, of course, and he's this slim Italian, American-Italian guy, and he's in an Italian neighborhood, and somehow from that he becomes one of the most influential entertainers the world has ever seen.
Well, you know, I'm Italian-American, and so in many ways I was able to relate to these early days of Frank Sinatra on the streets of Hoboken, New Jersey, where I spent a lot of time. And you know, he was a person who always believed in himself. He said that his only collateral was a dream, and his dream was to be one of the greatest vocalists of all time. And certainly he worked very hard, you know, to achieve that goal and make it a reality in his life.
And I remember seeing documentaries about him years ago, and he kind of used to walk around with an entourage even before he was famous. He almost acted like he was an A-list Hollywood superstar before he was, and that kind of worked for him.
Well, you know, it's interesting and that many of the people that I've written about over the years have that story. Certainly when I wrote about Madonna, you know, she always had a so-called posse. I mean, you know, Diana Ross, another person, Michael Jackson, another person that I've written about. These are people who always acted as if they were famous long before they were famous. It's almost as if they were, you know, channeling their future fame. You know, a lot of people believe that in order for you to achieve anything in this world, you have to act as if it's already occurred. And then it occurs. And yeah. Certainly Frank was of that mindset because he always acted as if he was famous, and that was many years before he was famous.
Now, we're going to touch on some of the revelations today, but obviously we're not time won't allow us to do it justice, really. So you've got to buy the book if you want to get the full picture. But starting off with his, was it his first marriage to Nancy? Is that right? Am I right remembering that?
Yes, they were very young when Frank married Nancy Sinatra. She was a
tough woman. Not his daughter, by the way.
yes, exactly. Yeah. He named his daughter Nancy as well. She was a tough woman who was determined to keep her family together no matter what it took. She was very reluctant to let Frank go, even though he was having affairs with a lot of women, such as Lana Turner. Eventually, though, she had to acquiesce. Frank became very serious about Ava Gardner when he was married to Nancy, and the passion that he and Ava felt for one another was undeniable. There was really nothing Nancy Sinatra could do except to give him a divorce, but it was... basically, she had to be dragged kicking and screaming to the divorce court because she wanted to keep her family together, like many Italian women of that time.
Now, she's portrayed, really, as this woman who's the one at home looking after the children. There's two children and a baby, if I remember rightly. And she's the one that's seen as, you know, she'll overlook some of Frank's, affairs and see them as frivolous and kind of mm-hmm. not really meaning much. And I suppose, you know... credit due to her. Was she the suffering housewife?
I would say no. I would say she was not a victim. I think that she felt that she had a certain power in maintaining the relationship, that she found power in trying to secure her marriage. She actually worked behind the scenes with Frank Sinatra's publicist to get rid of some of these women who had come into Frank's life. I think that there's just a point, though, when you have to give up the ship, and that's what happened with Nancy. But, you know, in this edition of the book, which is a little bit different from the first edition I published in 1997, I was able to really flesh out the character of Nancy Sinatra, and I found her to be a lot stronger and more formidable than I think a lot of people realized.
And she probably was quite well off because of all of this.
Well, of course, yeah. That goes without saying. You know, she never remarried. She's still alive. She's in her 90s, and she still refers to herself as Mrs. Frank Sinatra. So that tells you something right there.
It really does. And Lana Turner was interesting because Frank saw her in a film. Am I right in saying that? I mean, she'd made about 20 films by this point. And a great Hollywood star, but she had a bit of a reputation for liking a bit of Algy Father, as we call it in England, you know?
Well, you know, certainly Lana Turner was, you know, she made no bones about what she was about, which was she was a very sexual woman who enjoyed men. And Nancy Sinatra, Frank's wife, and George Evans, Frank's publicist, did everything they could think of, you know, to get rid of Lana Turner, but to no avail. They even tried to use the morals clause in Lana Turner's movie contract at that time, and Lana Turner laughed in their face. They said, you know, I've made a fortune out of appearing to be immoral in movies. That's my image. My image is tempestuous, so to try to use that against me is never going to work, because that's what I do. And ultimately what happened with Lana Turner was it was Frank who ditched Lana Turner, and he just was tired of her after a certain point, and that was the end of Lana.
I was reading a book, and when they came to Lana Turner and said, look, this is against our contract, blah, 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 for moral reasons, and she kind of said, how cute.
Exactly. I'm so happy you read that. I really appreciate you reading my book, by the way, because I do a lot of interviews with people who don't read the book. So I really appreciate that very much. And yes, she said, you know, that you're basically she was saying you're just so cute that you would think that this would impact me.
It's brilliant, isn't it? But, you know, it's quite something for somebody like Frank Sinatra's kind of caliber to say, I've had enough of you, too much for me, in that kind of way.
Well, that was, you know, one of the problems with Frank throughout his lifetime is that, as I wrote in the book, he was a man who was always looking around the corner for the next best thing. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of us are like this. You know, we're not satisfied. We're always believing that there might be something better right around the corner. But unfortunately, you know, that doesn't always work in a person's life. You know, sometimes you have to work on what you have, not hope that there's something better right around the corner. I think all of us who've been in relationships often wonder, you know, are we doing the best we can, or is there a better relationship if I just stay open to it? Sometimes it's worth working on something. And
yeah.
Frank was never of that mindset. Frank always believed that there might be something better. And, you know, as a result, I have to say, at least according to his own family members, Frank was never really happy because of this.
Amazing. And he had a string of affairs with women all over the place, you know, and people that probably not even worth a mention. It was just maybe a one-night stand here and there. But then, of course, as his career's taking a bit of a spiral, a downward spiral, and the films aren't there so much, and the films are being slated, and the music isn't selling as much, he meets Ava Gardner, who I've always kind of, whenever been looking at Sinatra's life, always felt she was the one for him. She, if there's ever a woman for Sinatra, it was Ava Gardner, as far as he was concerned.
Well, definitely, you're absolutely right. As far as he was concerned, that was the case. As far as she was concerned, the interesting thing about Ava Gardner, in my mind, was that she treated Frank Sinatra the way that he had treated all the women
yeah.
before her.
But was that an appeal to Sinatra, though? Almost, you know, the women weren't, you know, the other women would fall over him, and she was a little bit undetached, you know? Was that part
yeah.
of the appeal, do you feel?
I think you're right about that. I think that there was an appeal to that, but, you know, it became, in my mind, a desperate obsession for Frank more than it was true love. You know,
yeah.
it was very desperate, and the two of them locked horns and rattled swords for decades, even after they were married. They always believed somehow that they might belong together, but every time they were together, all hell would break loose. And you know, as I wrote in the book, even before Frank married Mia Farrow, and before Frank even married his last wife, Barbara Sinatra, he would call Ava to see if there was any chance that maybe the two of them might, you know, have another go at it. And it never happened. you know, Ava actually was somebody that Frank could not get out of his system. I actually believe, I think just based on what I know about Frank through my research, that if it had been any other way, she would have been out of his life a lot simpler. But she was always sort of, though they married, she was still sort of the one that got away.
Yeah.
Because he was never able to really capture her heart the way he wanted to.
And at some point he confided in somebody, I can't remember who it was, and just said, I can see it in her eyes. She doesn't love me the way that I love her. That sort of feeling came across him.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's what he said. He said that it's not equal.
Yeah,
were his words. You know, that he could say that it's not equal. And it's funny because even when he and Mia Farrow broke up, and when he began to date Marilyn Monroe, these were all women who had, you know, very tumultuous relationships with Frank Sinatra. But he would always say that he didn't want to treat them the way Ava Gardner had treated him.
Now, is it worth mentioning now that Sinatra, we're not 100% sure on all of these, but he tried to commit suicide on numerous occasions, and on a couple of occasions, it was almost comical.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. You know your Frank Sinatra history, because you're absolutely right, and I think that a lot of those suicide attempts were cries for help more than they were realistic suicide attempts. One story that comes to mind is when he was in New York with Ava Gardner, they had an altercation, a fight about something. He went into his room and shot his gun, and Ava came running into the room believing that he had killed himself, when actually he had shot the gun into a mattress, and yes. And not into his own body, into a mattress, to make a point, you know, that he wanted her attention. Obviously, that wasn't a real suicide attempt, or else he would have shot himself. You know, so there is a lot of, where it comes to Ava, I think maybe we can relate to this in our own lives. Sometimes you really, I mean, none of us hopefully would do that,
yeah.
But we do often want, it's a cry for help. You
yeah.
know, we want the person that we love to love us back, and that wasn't happening with Frank and Ava.
And with Ava, even towards the end of her life, I think she died in the 60s, didn't she, of pneumonia, and towards the end of her life, it was still there, even though it was, I think Frank was with Barbara at this time, wasn't he?
Well, you know, at this time, you know, Frank did everything he could to kind of keep an eye on Ava throughout her entire life. He was even paying her medical bills at the end of her life. And on her deathbed, she told one of my best sources, who was very close to her, that she always just believed that there would be more time for them, you know. And I thought that was so poignant, you know,
yeah.
because we very often, you know, wish that there was more time. And perhaps, you know, the object lesson here is to do the best you can with your life while you have the opportunity, because there will come a time when it's going to be over. And Ava, even at the very end of her life, was wishing that it could have been different between her and Frank.
I can imagine, yeah. And it's funny, really, even like you say, he with Mia Farrow, of course, and with Barbara towards the end of his last wife, and it never really left him, that fascination with Ava. I think I was reading your book earlier saying that he was overheard saying that, I wish I could have been there for her.
Yes, he was. He was sorry that he wasn't there for her, and it's not just a couple of years in my book. It basically, that relationship spans a good
yeah.
30 years of his life, and I really loved that relationship. I think it says a lot about both parties.
And again, Sinatra, I mean, we can talk about people that have been in his life, and you're talking about some of the most influential women of the 20th century, aren't we? We're talking now about Marilyn Monroe. I mean, Ava Gardner herself was beautiful looking, and you know, everybody wanted a photograph of her. Marilyn Monroe, of course, you know, just an icon, and had a friendship with Marilyn Monroe as it started.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. You know, I actually wrote a book about Marilyn Monroe a few years ago called The Secret Life of Marilyn Monroe, which was recently a miniseries here in America. And, you know, there was a very strong sort of attraction between Frank and Marilyn that many people couldn't understand, because Marilyn was so fragile and vulnerable, and Frank was generally attracted to strong, willful women, not vulnerable, weak women. Marilyn certainly fell into the vulnerable category, and many people couldn't understand why Frank was with her. You know, but his heart went out to her. He really felt that she was being abused by the Kennedys, and he wanted to do something to help distance her from the Kennedys. And he even suggested at one point that the two of them marry, because he felt that if she was Mrs. Frank Sinatra, perhaps she would be better protected. That obviously didn't come to, you know, to light. Never happened. But it shows how much Frank did care about her.
I wonder whether you want to share. It's in the book, of course. Frank was friends with Marilyn and actually moved in with her, but was never in a relationship with him in that respect until one incident took place.
I think the incident, I'm not sure if you're talking about this, but I think the incident was when she showed up in his kitchen naked.
That might be the one, yeah.
Well, and then they ended up having a sexual relationship right there in the kitchen, which, look, I'm sorry, but I think that's most people's fantasy right there. And the fact that Frank was able to work that out in his life and times is typical of a man who, you know, did it all. I mean, if you can have sex with Marilyn Monroe in the kitchen, I think that's a pretty good life.
And also, rumors of him going with, talking about the Kennedys there, with Jackie Kennedy as well. And he wasn't so open about that, though, was he?
Well, you know, the funny thing about Frank and Jackie is that I personally, and I've also, by the way, written about Jackie Kennedy, and actually knew Jackie Kennedy. She was the editor of my first book. I personally don't believe that Frank and Jackie ever had a romantic relationship, personally. But I will say that Frank always bragged to his friends that they did. But it was really not unusual for guys like Frank, you know, to throw back a couple of drinks and talk about their conquests and exaggerate them. And I think that that's really what was happening there. I don't personally believe that the two of them had a sexual relationship, but I will say that Frank said that they did.
Mm. What is it about Frank Sinatra, then, you feel, after looking at some of these amazing stories about his life, and we're just scraping the surface here, just tip of the iceberg stuff. What is it about Sinatra that makes him likable to the average person? Because he's in a life that's so detached from the majority of us, not leading a normal life whatsoever. And yet we kind of not want to like him because of his mafia roots or connections. We kind of don't want to like him because of the way in which he'd have a fight with somebody over something, or he'd have a fit of and trash places and chuck televisions out of windows and so on. But then we hear that he's championing Sammy Davis Jr. and being very political in that, and he's helping Marilyn Monroe because he felt that she was vulnerable. There's a heart there somewhere in the midst of Sinatra's life as a real man of principle somehow.
I believe that that's the case, and I think you've really summarized it very well. In my mind, Frank Sinatra has always been an anti-hero. He's a person who lived his life on his own terms, and I think that there's a certain aspect of that we're all a little bit envious of, to be able to live your life completely on your own terms. He was a man who had a conscience, even though he wasn't able to control much of his behavior because he was bipolar. And he was manic depressive during a time when these diseases weren't really treated very well. He actually had Marilyn Monroe's psychiatrist, so you know how well that worked out for her. You can imagine how well it worked out for Frank. You know, so the psychological odds were against him, but yet he always had a conscience. He was a man who was always trying to do better, but was always doing battle with himself in that regard. And I think that that's why we love Frank Sinatra. I think that he's an everyman in that sense, despite his sense of entitlement, despite his fame, despite his success story. There's something about Frank that appeals to the humanity in all of us.
And again, and of course, a legacy of great music and a great voice, which will always be with us. And, you know, I meet people of every age who say that they like Frank Sinatra, and there'll be those, of course, who don't like him. But there's such a big group of folks that are still listening to his music and requesting his songs on this station even yesterday. So, you know, he's still there in our society so much, isn't he?
So much. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because really, you know, I would not want to leave this interview without mentioning the music, because that's really what he was all about. And if you listen to Frank Sinatra's songs very closely, you will hear his story told in every bit as much detail as I could ever tell it, because Frank Sinatra chose his songs very carefully, and you know, he told his life story in each of his songs. So I highly recommend that people go out and buy the Frank Sinatra catalog. If you really want to know about Frank, read my book, obviously, but listen to the music, because that's where you hear the real Frank Sinatra.
Good stuff. And thank you for joining us today. Randy, have you ever done any work for Dean Martin?
No, but I did meet Dean Martin when I interviewed Frank. I interviewed Dean for my Frank Sinatra book 20 years ago for the original edition, and loved him so much. And I wrote about that actually in this new edition, my time with Dean Martin. And he was a great fellow.
I'd love you to do one on Dean Martin. Really would. Yeah,
I would love that. I would love that. You never know. One day.
Thank you, Randy. Really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye bye.
When I was 17, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for small town girls and soft summer nights. We'd hide from the light on the village green. When I was 17, when I was 21, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for city girls who lived up the stair with all that perfumed hair. And it came undone when I was 21. When I was 35, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for blue-blooded girls of independent means. We'd ride in limousines. Their chauffeurs would drive when I was 35. But now the days are short. I'm in the autumn of the year. And now I think of my life as vintage wine from